Welcome to Farmscape Online. I'm Bruce Cochran at Saskatchewan Pork Industry Symposium 2025. My guest is Lisa Keefe, a protein journalist and communicator with lisamkeefe.com. Thanks for joining us, Lisa.
Thanks, Bruce.
As part of Saskatchewan Pork Industry Symposium 2025, you discussed the retail meat counter, what consumers are buying, and how is it changing. First of all, when looking at the retail meat counter, what typically do we find there and how may that vary from store to store or region to region?
What you're going to find is a variety of meats because every grocery store is trying to appeal to the largest variety of consumers as they can. How that meat case is going to be set up is going to be different with each store depending on where it is, depending on who it's consumer base is. So in cattle country, you probably will over-index on beef, but then in other areas, perhaps they will have a pretty good selection of lamb and goat, depending on who the consumer base is.
Generally, when it comes to meat purchases, what are the key motivators of purchases and what are the factors there?
Number one, always price. Doesn't matter what the consumers say in response to surveys, that they'll buy a product because it's made in the USA or made in Canada, or that they will purchase certain claims. It really comes down to price is going to be the deciding factor in front of the meat case. After that, it's going to be taste, and by taste, it's going to be what have their previous experiences been. So if they had a dish and they had pork and it was overcooked and it was dry, they're going to think that it's the problem with the meat, not a problem with how they cooked it.
How are demands changing and what role do the generational differences play in the evolution of those choices?
Well, the generational differences are really key, more important now than I would have said maybe 30, 40 years ago. The differences are that stark, and it has to do with the rise of the internet and social media and how the younger consumers who are in their 20s, maybe early 30s at this point, are getting their information much differently than their elder brethren did or do. And this affects the way that they feel about the world around them, about the institutions that they deal with, about the food that they eat, the cultures and the cuisines that they interact with every single day. And these are younger consumers who are going to be taking these attitudes with them as they get older. So it's very important to pay attention to how their attitudes and behaviors are different from the older generations because they're going to become more and more important as they get older and have kids and have more disposable income and are shopping more.
How is the influence of social media evolving and what might we expect to change moving forward and what are the factors there?
The influence of social media has been, it would be hard to describe what it means. It's like if you think back when televisions were becoming more common in people's living rooms, we're seeing a dislocation in the culture that's bigger than that, actually. But it's the same sort of thing, where this medium has really changed the way that the consumers think, how they process ideas, whether or not they question what they're being told. They are taking in so much more information now than, for example, older consumers did when they were at that age. And they're taking it all in, but they're not necessarily able to parse it out and analyze it and think critically about it. So they're getting more information, but they're not getting more knowledge. Now, going forward, I only see this becoming more and more acute as a factor in terms of culture and consumer behavior.
How are processors and retailers responding, and how are they adapting to these changing demands, changing social media influences?
The processors who are very forward-thinking have made changes in their, if not to the formulation of the products, at least to the marketing, to say hey, get your chicken nugget in a dino shape for your kids. They'll eat it, and you can feel that they're getting in some protein. Or they have formulated a product that is specifically to be put into an air fryer, and I don't honestly know if it's terribly different from the other type of frozen whatever it is, but they're marketing it that way, and they know that people have air fryers, and that they feel that they want to buy this product specifically for that reason. And how that is changing, I think that retailers could go a lot further with meeting the consumers where they are, as scattered as that is, with different types of merchandising. Video at the point of sale has proven to be a really key selling point for a certain kind of consumer. And I think that is younger consumers. And so as they get older, they're going to be looking for more of that video information as they're walking through the grocery store.
What do pork producers need to be aware of, and why? And what are the recommendations for the actual producers?
Well, pork across, in competition with other proteins, pork lags behind. And I think that is not new news. I think the pork producers know that. I think that there would be a benefit and more profitability to the supply chain as a whole if the different elements in the supply chain would work together to create a product right from birth to the plate that meets some of these consumer expectations, whether it's organic or whether it's more marbled or less marbled or smaller animals, so that you have smaller portions because, you know, consumers are looking for smaller portions these days. It takes time for these things to work through the supply chain, but it doesn't take as much time for pigs as it does for cattle. So pork has an advantage in that regard.
What does the future hold?
It is a mixed bag, and a lot of it has to do with global economics, which I didn't go into, but pork producers are doing fine, both in Canada and the United States, and a lot of that is because of the strength of export sales. Global trade and tariffs and things are changing by the hour, and assuming that those do not get completely dislocated, that exports should continue to be a great market, and so then being able to spur more consumption and interest domestically ends up being a bonus. It ends up being a profit expander, if you will. And so I think that there's time and opportunity to make that focus domestically and nudge those margins up a couple of points.
How can anyone interested get more information?
Well, a lot of this coverage is in the publication Meeting Place, MeatingPlace. And you can get the magazine or look at the website at meetingplace.com. They cover all of the different proteins. I also write about it on my own website at Lisa, M as in Mary, Keefe, K-E-E-F-E, lisamkeefe.com. And I think maybe if you do a Google search, it'll come up more quickly than that. And I write about the protein on that and on my socials as well.
And is there anything you would like to add?
I think that the sky's the limit for pork, but it will take a lot of concentrated effort, and it's going to take some time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our guest has been Lisa Keefe, a protein journalist and communicator with lisamkeefe.com. At Saskatchewan Pork Industry Symposium 2025 for Farmscape Online, I'm Bruce Cochran.